You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And welcome back. It is the 96th installment of the Church of the Lampshade Show, and you're not going to want to miss this one. That's all I can tell you. We've got a whole bunch to cover, lots of great stuff. We've got a mail, it looks like Santa's sack. We've got a mailbag full of listener supporter mail here, comments, questions, etc. So we're going to get into that. I have officially settled on a new name for the show. We'll be starting that next week, so we'll be getting into the big reveal of that this week. You're gonna be excited about it. I'm excited about it. I love it. I think it's great stuff, so hang in there. Yeah, if you very much appreciate you all those financially supporting the show. If you want to be a part of that, information's at the bottom of the page. So without further ado, and yes, I am kind of moving right along because, like I say, we've got a whole lot we want to cover this week, a whole lot we want to get into. We don't want to waste any time, so let's get right into the listener supporter mail bag here. Grandpa, a few shekels and some thoughts on the importance of memory and good literature. This is from Nick, and he enclosed a quite lengthy piece written by Archbishop Carlo Maria Viano. I probably didn't say that right. And it is, yeah. But I wanted to take a quote out of it here, the very first part, and share it because I thought it was good stuff. And it says here, memory is a fundamental element of a people's identity, civilization, and culture. A society without memory, whose patrimony consists solely of the present without a past, is condemned to have no future. It is alarming that this loss of collective memory affects not only Christian nations, but also seriously affects the Catholic Church herself, and consequently Catholics. Now, obviously, we're not Catholic, but it still applies, so hang with me. This amnesia affects all social classes and is not the result of chance, but of systematic work on the part of those who, as enemies of the true, good, and beautiful, must erase any ray of these divine attributes from even the most marginal aspects of social life, from our idioms, from memories of our childhood, and from the stories of our grandparents. You know, I read this first part, and it is just, it's so true, you know. And of course, you know how I am about truth. I mean, this is what we do. We seek truth, and it's just so correct. You know, the people have no connection to their past. They're told that their entire history is made up of slavery and evil and racism. And they've destroyed that. You know, it's not that the memories have just like vanished on their own magically. They've been corrupted. They've been torn down. They've been told that it's evil. Because your memory consists of your history. I mean, yes, you have your own personal memory. But really, what we're talking about here is the history of the people, the memory of those who came before, the memory of the accomplishments of our ancestors. They paint those who came before as those who built this world around us. Even though we're seeing this dilapidated version now, it didn't necessarily start that way. They will point out all of the flaws as if any people in the history of the world had ever had a history that didn't contain flaws, errors, mistakes. Is every history to be discounted that is not a perfect history? Then there can be no history, because all history consists of the flow of time, of what the actions are, the collective actions of men, and men are in a fallen state in this world. There is no perfect men on this planet. So if no history can exist that is not a perfect history, then no history can exist at all. It is telling that for the communist, every day is day zero. There is no history. History starts today. We just make it up as we go. They detach the people from their sense of self by detaching them from their connection to those that came before. Everybody becomes isolated. Everybody becomes this hyper-individual any form of connection to the collective is severed. The individual wanders about with no one to lead them, no history to guide them, no heritage to be proud of. They stumble along and are easily led into all sorts of folly, into all sorts of foolishness, and ultimately into destruction. And as the Archbishop writes here, it's not by accident. It is an intentional plan, both by man and from the spiritual realm, from the realm of Satan himself. This is why what we do here, I believe, is important. What you do in your life as you stand for truth in whatever way you can, it is important as you counter it at the very source. They isolate the people with the sense of disconnect. There's disconnect. You're just floating around in the nether. And they easily are manipulated. They are easily led to a path of destruction. You have to have that tether to your past, to those that came before you, to your heritage, to the people. But when we look at our history, especially here in the West in general, we are told that essentially our history is nothing more than racism, oppression, white supremacy, and slavery. There's nothing else in the history. And yet, the very institutions that our ancestors built are the institutions that these corruptors, these destroyers, use, enjoy, and take advantage of. They use the very institutions built by our ancestors to sever our connections to our ancestors, to destroy the descendants of our ancestors. And no, it's not by accident. It is absolutely intentional. Got to keep rocking on here, GPL. Whatever you decide to name your show, I'll always be your number one fan and supporter, Mr. T. And it is very much appreciated. Trust me, y'all are going to love the new name. I love the new name. We're totally getting into that this week. I wanted to prepare you for the incoming new name. Hey, old friend, I hope this letter finds you well. I find myself entering into another season of life. I was tasked with caring for my elderly father for the past 2.5 years or so, and he recently passed away. I'm now clearing out and cleaning out his home estate for sale. What he willed me should be enough for me to start my own business, which I am pretty excited about. All the best and Merry Christmas, Brian, and condolences. I do think of y'all as extended family, and when I hear of one of you going through, a losing of a loved one or whatever, I don't just gloss over these things. I think about them, and I was thinking about, one of the things that's so, I don't know, as we have family members that pass away, there's a certain part of us that recognizes that moves us up in the line. You go through your life and one day, your grandparents pass away. And when your grandparents are all gone, your parents move up in the line to be next. In the generation before that, you move up as well. And eventually enough time goes by, you lose your parents. And then we're aware on some level that now we're at the front of the line. Time marches on, as they say, and time is linear, and this realm is linear, and it goes by, and it goes by very, very quickly. You don't realize it when you're young, but as the years fly by, you become very aware of how fleeting life is. And once we're at the front of that line and we realize that we're next in line to pass, and as Christian believers, we have the hope in Christ. We believe and know that we will be it amounts to a level up. Still, the idea of letting go of the familiar for the unfamiliar, even though the unfamiliar is something good and to be looked forward to, still the thought of leaving the familiar for the unfamiliar can be unsettling. And to be aware that these days are slipping by, you become aware of how many days you've squandered in your life. I look back on my life and so much of it was just squandered on things that didn't matter. Yes, we have to go through our life. Yes, we have to work. We have to do the things we can. And, the next thing you know, the whole day has gone by. All you've done is work to try to put bread on the table, to try to put food on the table, to try to keep having a way to get back and forth to work and so on and so forth. A roof over your head. The basic essentials that you have to have. We flitter our lives away on mindless entertainment. And that's not necessarily always bad. You have to have a distraction of some sort. You have to have something. Sometimes your mind just has to rejuvenate. You know, I see people that, oh, why do you like, you know, Korean dramas and anime? Because sometimes I want my mind to just be able to just be entertained. I don't want to have to sit here, you know, and think about these important things. I do that as well. And I do that better by having other things, you know, giving your mind a time to rest. Your mind has to have a time to rest the same as your body has to have a time to rest. And as his listener points out here, even as things move on and you lose a loved one, you also look to open another chapter in your life by hopefully opening your own business, which I do wish you the best with. And this, you know, back in the day, you know, previous generations, they would say, oh, well, get a job. You get a job with a big company, you stay with them, you retire from the company, and you have a pension. Boy, that must have been nice, huh? Those days are long gone. It's funny when you run into one of those people that's still around, you know, the older people, and they'll tell the younger people that, well, look, son, what you do is you go to college, you get your degree, and then you get on with one of these big companies, and you can just work there your whole life and retire and have a pension. And they don't understand why the young people laugh at them, because... you know, those days are long gone. Those days are long gone. So, yeah, wish you the best. And again, condolences. We're thinking about you here, the family of this congregation. Dear Grandpa, hope all is well up here in my Soviet Socialist Republic of a state. All hospitality services are limited outdoor only. I don't know about you, but trying to enjoy a craft beer at the local tap room from a solo cup while huddled under a feeble propane heater is just no bueno. So I'm sending some of my sanity going out money to the Lampshade household in hopes it will help put something a little extra under the tree or an additional side dish on the Christmas table. Kind regards. Till next time, Jackie. And his very much appreciated. Think about this whole COVID nonsense. Drives me crazy. It's so illustrative of the fact that we live in a post-legal society. These governors are just dictating this. There is no law. And if everybody, all of the businesses just got together and said, no, we're not doing that. I mean, what are they going to do? This is why they make an example. I mean, up in New York, it was up in New York here a week or two ago. You know, one restaurant guy said, no, I'm not doing this. New York, by the way, the murder rate is through the roof. Carjackings are up like 500%. But the cops swoop in, SWAT style, and arrest this guy for COVID violations for running his business. You see, they make an example. They get the one guy who mans up and sticks his head up and they knock him down. That way, everybody, because nobody wants to be the one guy. But if the people themselves said, no, we're not doing that. I mean, what law are they even enforcing? Why do we have state legislatures? What's the point? They don't do anything. They're just taking up air. They're just wasting our time. If the governor doesn't have to have laws, he just dictates from the throne of the governor's office, then why do we have state legislatures? Why are these people so willing to just give up their power to the governor who can now just rule by dictate in the name of a virus, of course? The hysteria continues on. The media keeps on telling us of all the people. This 6 quadrillion people now have died and have caught the doom flu. I still don't know anybody that's died of the doom flu. Do you? If their numbers are not a complete hoax. Anyway, it's very frustrating. All the people have to do is say, no, we're not going along with it. But everybody is afraid. Everybody's scared. They don't want to be that guy. GPL, here's some dough to help keep the internet on. There's two in here, one for myself, one for RA. So I will pass that on to Sven. Much appreciated. I'll tell you thank you on their behalf, on the behalf of the network as well. You, Sven, Dennis, Dr. Johnson, and all the others truly do the Lord's work. You guys have really pounded home for me the reality that we are indeed fighting a spiritual war against Satan and his minions. Thanks, many thanks for all the guidance and information. I share it with anyone I know who I feel is worthy of reaching. Quick question, secession is quite obviously the key to white survival and for the other races' survival too, whether or not they realize it. Both a physical and spiritual secession is needed from Zog. Harold Covington and the Northwest Front was, to my knowledge, the only real working party / organization that was unabashedly pro-white and had an actual goal with a roadmap to achieve it. HC's death and the subsequent shuttering of the NF has put a big hole in my plans of eventually moving to the PNW and pushing for secession there. I might as well stay here in Texas, which is arguably the state that most likely to succeed at the present. But like HC was fond of saying, Americans, modern Americans at least, don't have a history of organizing for revolution or secession. We've only attempted it twice in her history and only once successfully. Are there any serious secession organizations in Texas? How do we even begin to organize? We're just so far behind where it matters most, and we face the conundrum of doing something ostensibly legal but having to act as if it is illegal. Your brother in Christ, Durka Durka Jihad. And secession is, you know, see, I'm not discouraged about secession. In fact, I think secession is more possible today than it's ever been. And I think it's all in how you view these things. See, I don't see it coming about as we start an organization from the grassroots and we're going to call for secession and we're going to convince everybody and then we'll build up this secession movement. What time for that? The building is burning down around us. We don't have 20 years to build up a secession movement and building up something from the ground up. You're looking at taking 20 years minimum. I mean, it's the reality. The building is burning down around us. So why am I not discouraged? Because I see real movement in this way. People who have not been talking about it, because I've been, you know, eyeing and talking about secession for years now. Many of you probably have as well. But the thing that's different now is now people who haven't been doing that, you know, I'm loath to use the term normies because it kind of sounds derogatory, but for lack of a better term, we'll say normies. But normies are out here talking openly now about secession. People who wouldn't have been talking about secession, say, a year ago, are openly talking about it, and they're openly talking about it. People are coming. I read like two different draft papers, you know, talking about, you know, thesis basically about why it's inevitable. We have nothing in common. Where you find middle ground when you have a segment of the population that wants to impose communism 2.0 in the form of a new globalism and those that don't. You have this self-appointed elite that wishes to push communism 2.0 / globalism down the throats of everybody else. The problem arises in that red America, for lack of a better term, red America, normie America, regular, you know, right-wing America, whatever you want to call it, you know, they have no problem with a live and let live attitude. Let the communists go try to create their communist utopia and where the hell ever. Just leave us alone. Problem arises in that Bolsheviks have never been known for that. They have this need to subjugate. It makes them feel powerful. It's where they get their meaning in life. They want to force you to submit. I don't care that you disagree. In fact, that's where they get off on it. They get off on their sense of self-superiority by shoving it down your throat. Look at any of them. Look at any of these snarky bastards that get a TV program where they get paid millions of dollars a year to do, and their snark and the way they look down and they hate you and they despise the working class people. And I'm not just talking about, you can't think of this as a north-south divide either, because it is not. They look down on the worker, whether that worker lives in New York or whether the worker lives in California or Texas or Alabama or Mississippi, Georgia, doesn't matter. They look down on you. They hate you. And they want to subjugate you because it makes them feel important. They get off on it. They don't have a live and let live because what's the point of that? The point is they want to feel smart. They want the world to see that they are smarter and they are superior to you. Yes, those who run around and call people things like white supremacists, they are the ones who think they are supreme. They want to shove their agenda down everyone's throats. And there's a problem. They don't necessarily want to live and let live. They want to force you to be subjugated. But no, things are moving in this direction because the thing is, aside from the media to amplify their message and snark, they don't have much else. I mean, sure, they have, by and large, they have the power of the government right now to enforce this, but that power is starting to slip away with the corruption. The corruption is like a rust. It's eating away at it. And to take, for instance, this recent move by Texas suing these battleground states. We have all of this open corruption that the media continues to pretend doesn't exist. Doesn't matter how many videos you see of people stuffing the ballot and rigging the vote and pulling out, you know, unloading trucks in the middle of the night with mystery Biden ballots. Doesn't matter that they have 143,000 ballots that have no tie to a registered voter anywhere. We just have to count them anyway. You have to count all the votes. Doesn't matter. We're supposed to just go along with it. This Texas lawsuit over this, everybody's like, well, will it work? You can't view that just as, will it work to overturn this corruption? Because the corruption remains. Even if you had best case scenario, the Supreme Court goes in and says, yeah, no, this is ridiculous, and you're going to redo that. But the corruption, because the corruption comes from people, it remains. It's still going to be there, still going to fester up. I saw that, you know, you're talking about states, and all these other states jumped on and signed on to this Texas lawsuit. It, you know, we're at the point where states are dragging other states before the Supreme Court fight in court. I see this as a possibility as people look back in history and say, you know, this was one of the opening salvos of basically the balkanization of the country. And the sooner that happens, the better, because, you know, look, I secession is the ultimate answer. Balkanization is the ultimate answer. And the sooner that happens, the more peaceful that can be. There's nothing gained if things get really turn really ugly and violent. Human history tells us, though, that people tend to take things that way. You know, they don't sit down and say, hey, look, we're never going to agree with one another. Let's go our separate ways. Instead, you wind up with a whole lot of fighting and violence. And then at the end of that, then they say, well, let's go our separate ways. It'd be nice if we skip all that and just, yeah, anyway. Grandpa, thanks for your great shows this month, especially your recent melancholy episode, which sums up how most truth seekers are feeling as the decades of lies are now impacting us more and more. Through total society collapse. Unfortunately, all too many submit and proudly defend the horror of these lies. I wasn't shy and paid my monthly tithes in Bitcoin. May Yahweh bless you and yours, Phil. And yes, very much appreciate the support. I think, you know, a lot of when you see just, you know, like average people still clinging on. I mean, it's kind of like what I was saying earlier, you know, about facing death itself. You know, and even as Christian believers, and we have this hope and we have this faith in the eternal realm, the leveling up to the eternal realm, still facing the unknown, the uncertain. We don't know exactly what that's going to be like versus the familiar. Even when the familiar is bad, it can be difficult, even for Christian believers. And I think a lot of what you see is people, you know, that wind up sometimes defending the lies. I'm just talking about average people that still are clinging to basically the Zog system. You know, even though it's to their own detriment, it's this fear of the unfamiliar. I mean, we were just talking about secession, but what does that look like? What does the new country look like? I mean, how does that all shake out? It's completely uncharted territory. People have grown up their whole life, you know, I mean, thinking that America as it exists is somehow going to continue on. And as it becomes more and more apparent that this trajectory is completely unsustainable, then what does the new look like? And you'll have people still clinging to, you know, the old and failed, you know, I mean, no matter how bad it is, just simply out of a case of familiarity. Now, when it comes to people who just openly promoting and defending these lies, well, they are of Satan, and we know who Satan is. He's a liar and he is a murderer. And so, I mean, these people, you know, they're working on their own agenda, you know, aside from figuring that agenda and what they're trying to do so that we can counter it, I don't give a whole lot of thought to them. But when you look at the people who, in a lot of ways, they know the current collapsing system, unjust system, is to their own detriment. You'll see them, those are the people I find more interesting. You'll see them still clinging on to it just for the sake of familiarity, even though they know it's to their own detriment. Continuing on here, hope you have a great Kwanzaa, Grandpa, from Andy. Yes, I am lighting my Kwanzaa candles. And that reminds me, you know, I mean, one of the most revolutionary things you can do this time of the year, it's a great time of the year, is to say Merry Christmas. You don't realize how much they hate it. Looking back over my life when I was unaware of these things and, you know, the way they've tried to do away with, the way they're just so anti. They're anti-Christian. They really are. And looking back, you can see it. At the time, I couldn't see it, you know. Well, I just was so naive. You know, it's just too much trouble to spell out the C-H-R-I-S-T. They just put an X there. It's Merry Xmas. They're just doing shorthand. I was so silly and naive. They're literally Xing out Christ. You know, and some folks view the X as a sign of disrespect, you know, versus the cross. An X would be like a counter to that. And they replace Christ with an X in your face. Then they turned, that wasn't enough. There isn't enough. It became Happy Holidays, and Jesus was replaced with Santa Claus. And I have no problem with, you know, kids having fun with, you know, what Santa going to put under the tree. Oh, that's great. That's fine. I'm not being an absolute Scrooge here. But it is Christmas. When they hear you say Merry Christmas, it bothers them more than you can believe. You know, it really does. They hate it. Why? Because they hate Christ. They hate him. People sit there, oh, y'all just believe in this religious mumbo jumbo. And you look at those who are destroying the societies around us, those who hate you, those who just, they hate all that is beautiful and all that is good. And what else do they hate? They hate Christ. They hate Christians. They hate his church. They hate his people. Must just be because of some other reason. No. I mean, this is very much indeed a spiritual battle. And finally, from Eric, no note in here, but I did get it, and I very much appreciate it. So, yeah, let's keep on rocking here. That wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. And once again, had a bunch this week. Very much appreciated. Like I said last week, look, if everybody listens to the show, sent $5 a month, I could have a happy middle class lifestyle until the whole thing burns down. What, probably next week? Who knows? I mean, this thing is coming apart so fast, it's mind-boggling. But that information is at the bottom of the page. Again, we got snail mail, we got Bitcoin. If you have a weirdo cryptocurrency, got any mail for that? So it is very much appreciated. So yeah, special Merry Christmas for all of you. Okay, so as I said at the top of the show, finally, I've kind of come down on a show rebranding, as it were. And I just like to say up front, I appreciate all the feedback I've had on this. I mean, some of y'all had some really good ones, and I was sitting here kicking these around and thinking what fits right again. And I want to say, you know, all the way to, I had, of course, several folks say, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We like the current name. We like the current monikers. And, you know, and I just want to reestablish that nothing is changing with the show. This is essentially, we're repainting the church here. I mean, and I know you're skeptical because maybe you've been to like an IRL church and they're like, oh, we're changing this and we're changing that, but nothing else is going to change. And it wound up being a lie. You know, they changed everything. You know, we've all been there. We've all been a member of some organization. They would say, we're going to do this and that, but don't worry, we're not really changing anything. And it wound up being a lie, but this is not a lie. Okay. We're not, I love the show. I love the show as it is. We're not changing anything about the show. This is just simply, once again, an effort to where when people come on Radio Albion, they look through. Like I said, I mean, you've got the Orthodox Nationalist. I love Dr. Johnson's work, by the way. You've got the Orthodox Nationalist. You look at that and you know what the show is about. You know, the greatest Britons. Well, I wonder what the show is about. Well, it's obviously it's about the greatest Britons. It says what it is. And my problem with the Church of the Lampshade, as much as I love the show name, you know, and love what we do here, is what is that? What, you know, it doesn't hit. What's the show about? If somebody hasn't decided to invest the time to listen to the show, because I'm absolutely convinced of what we do here is so good, so important. We have a church family, even if it's virtually, but hell, everything's virtual now in the name of the doom flu. I really believe in what we're doing and believe in the congregation. I believe in the message we're doing and this back and forth that we share. I think we have something absolutely special here. And I believe if people listen one time, they'll be here. They'll want to listen and they'll want to hear this all in all. But just like how most people just read the headlines of a story, you know, they go through the news. They're not like me or probably some of you who actually read through the story to see what it's about. They just skim the headlines. So you'll see these outrageous headlines and people just are left with an impression. If they read the story, they could maybe possibly figure out that the headline actually was deceptive. But a lot of the same way, a lot of people, somebody comes on Radio Albion, they scroll through here and, you know, well, there's Patriotic Alternative. Pretty obvious what that's about. But when they would come to the name Church of the Lampshade, I mean, it doesn't convey what the show is about. In the old show, that was the name of the segment because I had so many people asking me Christian questions that it just became a segment of its own. And when we started this show, it just became natural for familiarity's sake to use that title for the title of the show. But it's really time for a facelift. It's time for an update. And again, it's not changing anything about the show. You have my word on that. But anyway, I did want to say thank you to everybody who contributed, who got in touch and said, hey, how about this? How about that? And even, like I say, those who said, I hate change. I know that feel too. I tend to be against change as well. And I took a while with this because I really wanted it to hit, you know, I wanted it to be something that I liked and something that I think we could all be proud of. And I want to give credit where due because I was settling on another thing that I personally had come up with, and this came from listeners, came from Chuck, so I want to give special thanks to Chuck. And I emailed him back and I said, yeah, I like that one, I'll consider it, I'll kick that around a little bit. And the more I kicked it around, the more I liked it. And that is, you know, I sat down with Sven Longshanks before we recorded Friday's installment of Clown World in Review, aka the Daily Nationalist, and bounced it off of him. I'm like, look, this one I like. I think this is what I'm going to go with on the show. What do you think? And he agreed. He thought it was great. He thought it conveyed what the show was about. It's, I think it's going to be good. So this will technically, by name, be the last installment of the quote unquote Church of the Lampshade. And next week we'll start that. But see, the count, here's how much the show isn't changing. This is the 96th episode of the Church of Lampshade. Next week will be the 97th installment. And we're going to keep the count going because, again, the show isn't changing. We're just putting the different title up there. But anyway, so next week you're going to want to look out for it. As we will be doing The Parish of the Patriots. I like it. It still conveys our, you know, the Church of the Parish of the Patriots. And I think it'll be Grandpa Dan's Parish of the Patriots. I like it. And hopefully you'll like to. I'm excited about it. I think it really conveys a lot more accurately what we're doing here with the show. And it's just change isn't always a bad thing. And like I said, when it comes to the content of what we're doing, I'm not even changing the show count. So next week will be the 97th installment of The Parish of the Patriots. And people stumble and be like, 97th installment? When I went and listened to 96, you were calling it something else. That's right. But what we're doing here isn't changing. So we'll continue the count on. So, I hope you're excited about the name. I like it. I think it has a nice ring to it. So, if you think it's horrible and gay, I'm sorry, you know, I apologize for that, but maybe it'll grow on you. The show is horrible and gay, and now the name matches the show. It's horrible and gay, too. Yeah, I'll probably get some of those emails, but I think it'll be good. I think if you give it a chance, you'll like it. The name will grow on you. I'm sure I will mispronounce it. I'll trip over my tongue. It'll take me a while to get used to it because, you know, it's difficult for me. And as I settled on this new name, The Parish of the Patriots, I thought about it, I was reflecting on it, and I thought we'd discuss a little bit, and look at the time, we're definitely going long today, don't worry. Nothing new there. The Parish of the Patriots tends to run a little bit long. It's, when's this sermon going to be over? I got the football game to watch. Remember that? You'd be back in the day, when you go to church, you know, before it was like it is now. And I remember back in the day, they would rush, you know, who's going to get out first to go eat lunch or go watch the football game. And you would have practically a derby race between the Baptists and the Church of Christ people and the Methodists. And it's like, we're going to get out earlier. We're going to go eat lunch and go watch the football game. When's this sermon going to end? Well, we do run a little long here sometimes, and it looks like today will be one of those days. But nonetheless, hopefully it'll be enjoyable enough. The time just flies by. You won't even notice. But no, this got me thinking about that term, patriot, because we hear that term tossed around a lot in society. If you went up to the average person in red state America and said, what's a patriot? And they would probably point to the military. Look at our soldiers. Our soldiers are patriots, but are they? The police. So you see these people, I drive around and then people have these American flags that the stripes instead of red or blue. It's very cringy. There's a big blue stripe. The police. The police are patriots. And everybody, just keep that in mind when they drag you out of your house for violating COVID restrictions. At least you're being dragged out of your house by the patriots. But what is? Let's ask the question, what makes a patriot? That's an important thing to consider. And once again, it's one of those terms that most people don't consider. They toss it around, but they don't ever actually think about what they mean by it. It's just a term they toss around. He's a real patriot. Really, why? What makes this person a patriot? What makes a patriot? The patriot doesn't go wandering about the world looking for dragons to slay. The patriot doesn't go about looking to stick his nose in other people's business in countries that are not his own. The patriot stays close to home and defends his land and defends his people. The patriot realizes the importance of family and that the nation as a people is his extended family. What shepherd abandons his flock to go about on a hunting trip? The patriot does not abandon his family and leave them unprotected at home to go around the world and pick fights elsewhere. The patriot stays home. The patriot acts as a shepherd and tends to guard his kin and his family's extended family, his nation, and his people. The patriot recognizes that the nation is not a simple ideology. It is not an idea. That's something we see thrown around. America's an idea. It is the most absurd, ridiculous lie that the people have bought into. And still, you see people who are ostensibly in other areas of their life. They may be very learned. They may be very educated. And yet they will throw about this lie. America is an idea. No nation is an idea. The patriot recognizes this. The nation is a people. The nation is the extended family of his people. The patriot does not go about and try to be a patriot for other peoples, you see, because that is an insult to the patriots of those people. And what do I mean by that? The white patriot advocates for and defends his people, the white people. He doesn't have to go around and defend the black people. Why? Because it is an insult to the black patriots. You see, the black people have their own patriots, and they are working for the interests of their people. They do not need you abandoning your patriotism to your people to go and act as some sort of surrogate for them. It's an insult to them, quite honestly. The patriot doesn't need to do that. The patriot is happy to watch over his flock. He doesn't have to go run over and try to push shepherds out of the way to tend to their flock, too. You're not doing a good enough job. It's an insulting sort of thing. The patriot recognizes that from time to time when different people's goals line up and work the same, you can form alliances and move forward with those people. But the patriot also recognizes that alliances are not meant to be till death do us part. If alliances have to be permanent, then it becomes inevitable that when your goals cease to coincide, the only answer is to turn your swords on one another. And this makes alliances impossible. Alliances are always temporary. Alliances with other peoples and people with other agendas only last so long as your goals line up. This isn't anything extravagant or new. Nations used to operate this way all of the time, and it was understood that alliances were just temporary things. As long as we share a goal, why can we not join forces? An example of this here in Clown World, we've been talking about secession. If black nationalists want their own part of the country to make their own Wakanda nation, then why should we be opposed to that? Why should they be an enemy? Our goals line up in that matter. We too want a secession. We too want our own lands. Why should we deny that to anybody else? But it doesn't mean that now we have to be aligned up with these people for here on for every issue. This notion of alliances being permanent is a modern creation. It was never that way in history. And that's not the way that reality itself should work. The patriot stands for what's true, because you cannot promote what is right with a lie. If something is right, then it should. If something is correct, then it can be promoted with truth. The notion that you can promote a greater good by lying, with a lie, by deceiving the people and convincing them with a lie that you're going to trick them to taking a better path, the patriot realizes this is counterproductive. If a direction that the people should go in, if if a notion, if an idea is grounded in truth, if it is indeed righteous, if it is correct, you don't need to lie to cover it up. People use lies to deceive. If your idea, if your notion, if your vision for the people and for the future is a correct one, then you don't need to trick the people into it. You should be able to stand on truth. An idea that cannot stand on truth is an idea that holds no water. We should be able to promote. The patriot realizes that his ideas, if his visions, if his vision for the future, if his vision of where the people should go and which direction his nation should go is the correct one, then it's easily and most easily supported and defended with and promoted, for that matter, with the truth. The patriot does not abandon his people when they come under attack from the enemy. When the patriot's adversaries, when the destroyers come, when those who wish to destroy the nation pick out a member of the flock, a member of his kin, and call him names and point him at and accuse him of being a bad thinker, the patriot doesn't abandon them and side with the liars. Now, those of us who have been in the dissident right for years and promoting ideas that were once out of the mainstream that are becoming more mainstream now, you know, we've been used to trying to deal with this sort of thing for years, but now people who, you know, normal conservative type of people are coming to understand this, and they've got to, we've got to try to bring them up to speed. They have to understand that you have to quit jumping through the hoops when they point and scream racist, bad thinker, so on and so forth. You see, the patriot doesn't abandon his people to the wolves. Just keep using the shepherd and sheep analogy. The patriot goes and defends the sheep against the wolf. He doesn't side with the wolf. You're right, this is a bad sheep. This sheep shouldn't have been over here. I told him not to be over here. We're going to jump in with the wolves and just here, I'll help you cut the sheep up. And yet that's what we see in this corrupt society all too often. The patriot does not do that. You notice how with the commies, they never toss one of theirs. Even when one of their own does something really outrageous, something really out there that you know they wish they hadn't, the other commies wish they hadn't said that or hadn't have done that. But you notice they never throw them under the bus. Yet it is people in red America who also often will throw their own under the bus. This is not the behavior of a patriot. The patriot defends the heritage. The patriot defends the heritage, the traditions, and the beliefs of the people, of his people. Because an attack on those things is an attack on the people themselves. Perhaps the wolves don't come and attack the sheep directly, but they scatter the sheep so that they're easier to pick off. This brings about this hyper-individual we talked about earlier, where they separate the people from their sense of history, a sense of self, sense of belonging, sense of connection to their ancestors. This is a scattering of the sheep to make them easier to manipulate, easier to lead to slaughter. The patriot embraces his heritage and his history and what his ancestors built. He doesn't have to look at and point out and agonize over it not being perfect. Again, the patriot recognizes that no people is perfect. Nobody aside from Jesus Christ himself that ever walked the face of the earth was perfect or was without fault or did not make mistakes. The patriot stands guard over his nation and over his people in whatever way he can. Even when it's not popular, even when they don't want it, the patriot stands guard. Regardless, the patriot sounds the alarm. The patriot does his best to protect the people. Even when the people say they don't want it, even when the people complain about what he's doing or nitpick and say that it's not right, the patriot stands often alone in the cold, in the rain, unappreciated, but nonetheless vigilant. The patriot does not sacrifice what is right for what is expedient. The patriot often, more often than not, will find themselves on, you know, the rockier path, but is the path of what is right. Because once again, once you start down the path of lies, once you start down the path of what is simply expedient, it continues to go downhill and lead you away from truth, and ultimately is destructive for both the patriot and those around him, those who, you know, his people and his nation. Notice the name of the show is going to be The Perish of the Patriots, plural. When I'm talking about what makes a patriot, I'm talking about all of you. This isn't me bragging on myself or something. I'm talking about you. I'm not even talking about me. I'm talking about you. How you go your day-to-day life. How the patriot, what makes a patriot? Again, we hear people throw that term around and they have no idea what it even means. They don't give it a second thought. But if words don't have, words have to have definition, they have to have meaning, they have to have some sort of sentiment, meaning attached to them. Otherwise, again, they're just meaningless terms tossed about. Our society's become so corrupt that the language, they've corrupted the language where words have no meaning anymore. Look at the insults they throw. Racist, white supremacist. All of these, they have no meaning. They never get pressed on what do these things mean? What does a racist, what is a racist? Does anybody have any idea? We hear the term thrown about, but nobody ever presses them for a definition because there isn't one. It's just simply an insult. What is a white supremacist? Nobody knows. If it's somebody, you know, you're supposed to just get a vision of an evil thinker, you know, somebody running around with a clan hood on or something. But who's doing that? Nobody. Then there are none, are there? It's just a slur. It's just an insult. But it remains important whether they're derogatory terms or, you know, terms that are, that are positive, you know, in their meaning, such as patriot, to have actual definition. What makes these things up? Being a patriot does not mean supporting the government, no matter how corrupt, or how wicked, what sort of evil they promote. What patriot supports injustice? What patriot supports injustice brought down on the people? What patriot supports a system to where the poor are oppressed, and yet no matter what crime the wealthy commit, they walk off scot-free? This is injustice. And it is something counter to the beliefs of the patriot. The patriot believes in equality as defined by equality under the law. There cannot be justice if the poor man does not get the same benefit of equal treatment under the law as the wealthy man. The patriot does not promote the oppression of the foreigner because it becomes an oppression of his own people. Let's bear down an example of that, because I threw this one in here and knew it would need a little bit of explaining. You see, when they say they import the foreigner, this does not mean the patriot invites the foreigners into his own land. That would be a scattering of his own people, of his own flock, as it were. But you see, the patriot doesn't support the oppression of the foreigner when they import the foreigner into your lands against your will. But when they bring the foreign worker in to pay them pennies on the dollar so that they can reap more profit, they are oppressing the foreigner and the people themselves, the native, you know, the people, your kin as well. You see, because both are being oppressed because they use it to suppress the labor costs so that they themselves can reap more profit, can reap even more wealth. Even though they have abundant wealth, more than they could spend in multiple generations, it's still never enough. A lot of things I think we lose sight of when we get into this issue, you know, of bringing people in from other countries to compete for our jobs. And people too often direct that hostility towards those who are being brought in. But they miss the point that those people are being used and oppressed. They're the ones being paid less wages than everybody else to drive the labor pool down. Is it incorrect to simply point your disgust or your anger or your outrage at those people? They're being manipulated and used as well. This is really a double wicked sword because they are oppressing both the people of the nation and those that are they are bringing in as well, all for their own profit and all for their own greed. The Patriot opposes these things on the grounds that it is immoral for everybody involved. Why should the workers be exploited for the sake of those who already have an exceeding abundance of wealth so that they can garner even more wealth? This is counter to nationalism and is counter to patriotism. The patriot has no need to go around hating other peoples. The patriot doesn't have to go around hating foreigners. But likewise, the patriot does not invite foreigners to come and invade the land of his own people. This is treachery against his own people. In this insane clown world we live in, if you oppose the notion of importing the rest of the world into your own lands, they tell you this is somehow hatred. It means you hate those people. But it is not. And the patriot recognizes that this is a lie. It does not require hatred to want to maintain the lands of your own people. Isn't it amazing that the people who accuse you on the one hand of hatred because you don't want to import the rest of the world into your lands, on the other hand, have no problem with the idea of going to those people's lands, be it in Africa or the Middle East, and bombing them or shooting them or killing them by any number? That, they tell you, is somehow okay. That's somehow righteous. But if you oppose bringing those people into your own lands, that is hatred. It is a lie on his face, isn't it? The notion that if you oppose, I don't want to import somebody from, you know, peoples from another land on the other side of the planet that are foreign people, that have a foreign culture, that have a foreign way of life. I don't want to import them into my land. It doesn't mean that you hate them. It just means you don't want them there. You know, this is your lands. They have their lands. And again, it's just so ironic to me that the same people who accuse you of hatred for opposing this will say that it is patriotic to go to those people's countries and to drop bombs on them, shoot them, and kill them. They say this is somehow the right thing. This is not hatred. This is somehow some form of righteousness or patriotism. It is not. It is a lie. And this brings us full circle. You don't have to remember all this. There's more elements that I'm sure I haven't touched on. You don't have to take notes. Because you can summarize it all up with the patriot stands for truth. The patriot stands for truth even when it's an uncomfortable truth. The patriot stands for truth even when it's not popular, and it most often is not. The patriot can stand in truth because the way of righteousness and the way that is right and the correct ideas also stand in truth. It is a lonely job. Being a patriot is not a popular position to have. The patriot finds himself often alone and segregated, standing for what is right when everybody is demanding that you go along with what is being promoted, go along with the lie. The patriot stands for truth. That's that simple. And again, I refer to all of you. You've probably thought of yourselves as a lot of different things, and you've probably attached a lot of different labels to yourself. But how often have you ever attached the term to yourself as that of a patriot? Probably not. You probably have said that I wouldn't consider it. You don't believe in going to the Middle East and killing people that have nothing to do with what we're doing. That's what society says equals patriotism. But you are a patriot. You're a patriot if you stand for truth. You're a patriot if you stand for justice. You're a patriot if you stand for what is right. We're going to get into the Christian-specific segment here of the show. And like I say, looking at the clock, we're probably going to run long, but that's okay. We're just going to keep on rocking. Don't worry. If you're new stopping by, it won't be that long. I'm not going to take up 2 hours of your time. I wouldn't last that long. These shows are mentally, spiritually draining for me. Trust me, it won't be that long. But we do want to get into our Christian-specific segment. Like I say, we get these discussions going, and then we go in for our sermon, as it were, of the week. So let's get on in here. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian-specific segment of the show. So as you get settled in, if you're like me, I paused. You probably paused the show. Get your fresh drink, coffee, whatever. That's what I did. Had to pause recording. Go over here and get me a fresh cup of coffee. Shake it out. Get ready for this always important, much anticipated Christian-specific segment. Get back into reading a little scripture here, and then we'll get into our topic for the day in the Christian-specific message. We're into the book of Jude for chapter 1. Let's do verses 7 through 10. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal life. Likewise, also, these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and break and speak evil of dignities. Yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." But these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally as brute beasts, in those things they corrupt themselves. So, okay, yeah, a few things as we've read through this, a few things I thought we would highlight and point out. Again, we'll back up here to verse 7. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them, in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication, going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. And then skipping forward again here, verse 10. But these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally. And then this example, as brute beasts, they're like animals. In those things, they corrupt themselves. You know, I was thinking, what got me thinking about this is, it is said among the Jews that the goyim, which are the non-Jews, are like cattle, like donkeys or livestock. They see themselves as superior over these goyim cattle. But is it wrong? Are they incorrect? We ourselves use the term that often will say the people are such sheep. Everybody listening at some point in time has probably said, you know, the people are such a bunch of sheep. You look at them all running around, doing everything they're told, never questioning authority. Are the goyim livestock? Are the people a bunch of sheep? It's easy to dismiss this as simply like an insult. It's insulting. It's something we take offense at. And yet, if you wake up early in the morning and go out and see the people on the Friday after Thanksgiving, ushering in the Christmas season by standing in line to rush into a Walmart to spend money they don't have on a bunch of cheap crap they don't need and will forget about in short order, you have to wonder if the people really aren't, in a lot of ways, livestock. Or maybe more accurately, the way to think of it is, at what point do the people, what makes people behave that way? What makes people become like cattle, like livestock? I mean, surely I suppose there's a certain quality in people or just a certain element of human nature that makes them want to be tended after and herded around. But this is a destructive thing, as we just read in the scripture here, as the people of Sodom and Gomorrah went running around chasing, rutting everything. They were having all kinds of degenerate sex all the time, chasing after strange flesh, doing all of these things, this wickedness, like they'd gone mad. They're running around like nothing more, no different than animals. Just like animals in the rut. Just running around, just doing whatever, like unreasoning beasts. But what makes the people that way? Now, obviously, we just read examples of people who lived and died long ago, and they were behaving in such manner. And yet, we look around at people in our world today, and we act as though this is shocking, as though this is something new. But it isn't really. It's not really new. So what is it that makes people like unreasoning beasts? Just make them act like animals. I would say it is directly relevant with how separated from the spiritual they are, from the spiritual nature that they are. We talked earlier about how they atomize people, how they hyper-individualize people by separating them from their history, from their culture, from their ancestors, from any sense of belonging to a actual functioning society as a whole. But a part we didn't touch on, I didn't touch on it then intentionally because I knew we'd be getting into it in this segment, is the element of the spiritual. See, this is a key thing. They separate the people from the spiritual nature. They have undermined the church to where it is unrecognizable by and large as a whole, as it's unrecognizable from the message promoted by the world. The people aren't receiving a spiritual message anymore. They aren't receiving spiritual nourishment, spiritual instruction, spiritual insight. They're simply getting a yet another regurgitation of the global homo agenda. They separate the people from their past, from their sense of belonging, from their heritage, but they separate the people from their beliefs, from the spiritual nature. And the further away, I mean, you look at Sodom and Gomorrah, how much further away from the spiritual nature could you get from that? And yet, is it really much more discernible from modern day, say, San Francisco? As people become separated from God, as people become separated from their sense of belonging as a people, as they become hyper-individualized like this, they become more easily herded. They become more like livestock. This is not what God intends for the people to be. Yes, in the scriptures, you know, the illustration is often used as a shepherd tending to his flock, to his sheep. But it's not meant to be an insult to the sheep. It just means that from the spiritual realm, God seeks to look after you. But we are referenced by the blood of Christ as children, as heirs with Christ, as children of God. You see, we're not supposed to be livestock. When you see the people trampling over each other for materialism, for crap that doesn't even matter, it isn't like people are trampling over each other. You know, you can't look down on people who are starving and somebody shows up with a case of food and people are trampling over each other because they're starving and they want something to eat and they need to get something for their children to eat. And you can't look down on people for that. What do we have in this country? People trample over each other to go in there and buy some cheap piece of crap that isn't going to last 6 months, that they don't even need. They're using their credit card because they don't have the money to buy it. They're going to just go into further usurious debt to buy some cheap trinket that was made overseas that isn't going to last. They don't need it. They're rushing around, just trampling one another, getting into fist fights like animals. This is not godly. This is not what God... See, Satan always wants to tear you down. Satan can't attack God. So what does he do? He goes after his kids. He goes after his children. And the more he can convince God's children to become more and more debased, more and more animalistic, just unreasoning, no connection, no sense of morality, no connection to the spiritual nature. They've just shunned it all and bought into the world. Trample each other, get into a fist fight for some piece of crap that's going to wind up in the dumpster or in the corner of your closet in 6 months, and you're never going to think about it again. Your worth, your value in this world is how much crap you can collect, whether you need it or not. Then Satan points and says, look, he said you made these beings in your own image. Well, here's what you've got. Here's your supposed own image. out there chasing after strange flesh, out there trampling each other for trinkets, for materialism, not giving a second thought to the spiritual realm, to the eternal. They don't give a second thought to those things. They'll kill each other over things that will be discarded in just a few short months. This livestock mentality, and it's not deniable. I mean, it is not deniable that in so many ways, so many of the people have a livestock mentality. But it is a symptom. It is a symptom. It runs in direct correlation to how separated they are from the spiritual nature. They don't place any values on themselves. They have no dignity. What's dignity? What matters is if I get this plastic trinket. You see, they have abandoned their worth. Remember, as a Christian believer, how many of these people, if you went and stopped them in the middle of their melee to clamor around to get in there to use their Visa card to buy some piece of crap at a Walmart, how many of them, if you could stop them in the middle and say, hey, are you a Christian? Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. As a Christian believer, you were bought at a terribly high price. You have to always remember that. Your faith, your hope that you have, your salvation, it wasn't free. You know, it's like they'll come out and they'll say, you know, oh, well, go down here and you can get whatever, food or checkup or whatever. And it's free. Go get your COVID test. It's free. It's not free. Somebody's paying for it. You know, usually the government or whatever, and they pay for it for a reason. They want you to go get your COVID test. They need higher numbers. But I digress. Likewise is your salvation. It cringes me when Christians say, oh, you know, they'll tell non-believers, you can reach eternal life and it's free. But it's not free. Somebody paid it and it came at an extremely high cost. It didn't come at the cost of a few dollars or some monetary wealth. That came at a huge and terrible cost. The blood of Christ. And yet what? Christian believers are running about debasing themselves, acting like unreasoning animals, trampling around, acting like livestock, chasing after every form of debauchery, materialism. Look, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wanting to have some nice things. God doesn't want his children to just suffer in poverty. That's not what I'm saying. I have faith that you as the congregation get that. I'm talking about this hyper-material, this materialism that permeates our society today. It is a symptom of how separated from the spiritual the people are. And yet these people would claim, oh, I'm a Christian believer. Really? But you're acting this way. You were bought at a terribly high price, and yet you take this thing, your life, and debase it by running about and acting like unreasoning animals. But why? They're separated from the spiritual. The modern cuck church, being what it is, just mimics the words of Global Homo. They don't bring the people closer to the spiritual. They drive them further away. They promote the lies of the society. They promote the lie of the government. They promote all of these, this materialism. Oh, your value, you have to raise the GDP, go spend more money. I remember back when George W. Bush was going to launch the big crusade into the Middle East in the name of the democracy, and he told the people the best patriotic thing you can do, there's that word again, being a patriot means you need to go to the mall and spend more money. Remember when they said that? Go spend, we'll run up your credit card some more. That's being a patriot. Indulge in more materialism. It's what you can do for your people, your nation, your God. But it's all a lie. And the lie is made possible because the people are separated from the spiritual nature. That wedge has been driven there. The closer you are to the spiritual, to the eternal, you know, those things aren't effective on you. When they attempt to drive you away, to drive you into this animalistic behavior, like, yeah, well, no, I'm not really down with that. You know, I like it over here, closer to the eternal, to the spiritual. So they have to lead you away. They have to trick you. They have to talk you into just out here a little bit. Just out here a little bit. A little further. A little further. And that's the way it works. You know, Satan doesn't jerk you away from you right here as close as you are to the spiritual realm out here to the land of complete animalism. He has to walk you away. And that's the way sin works. You get comfortable. And okay, everybody sins, you know, obviously you're a fallen person living in a fallen world. This is the nature of how it works. But the way sin works is once you get comfortable with it, you know, you get comfortable with that sin, and then you get a little further out there, you know, and then a little further out there. And then before you know it, you thought you were just a little ways away from the spiritual. You'd bumped a little ways over. But the next thing you know, you look up and around, you're in a whole different world. You're out here like livestock. You're like unreasoning beasts. Running about, just like the whole rest of the world. And how did that happen? So the people look to the church and they say, okay, well, let's look to our so-called Christian leaders. And what are they saying? They're saying you're doing everything right. Everything's good. Just keep doing what you're doing. God loves you. Jesus paid for your salvation. It's free. It's free. You don't have to worry. Your salvation's free. When we look at the nature of this society, whether it's the ever-growing popularity of drugs and promoting drugs, whether they're technically legal by all of these, you know, prescriptions people can get, or whether they're buying black tar heroin off the street. We have states now that are moving to legalize like all narcotics. Or whether you look at the sexual degeneracy that is promoted nonstop. It all works in conjunction to drive people further and further and further away from the spiritual. The more separated you are from the eternal, from God, the more just you're left with what? But just, you know, it's just being an animal. You look at these people who are like these real, like crazy environmentalists and stuff, you know, and they act like man is not a part of nature. You know, like you have nature and the animals and the wildlife living out there in perfect harmony if man didn't exist. As though man isn't a part of nature. And yet, man holds a special position as a part of nature because men are not supposed to simply be unreasoning beasts. They're supposed to be made in the likeness of God. They're supposed to serve as stewards over this creation that God has made as part of God's, you know, what the system that God set up. And yet the people have abandoned this. They've abandoned the stewardship of the world and just joined with the animals. They're just, you know, the non-believer and the environmentalists say, well, people are just nothing more than just another form of mammal. You're not superior to a beaver. The beaver's life has as much value as your life. But as further away from the spiritual nature, the more you do become just like another animal. You see, that's what sets you apart. That's what sets man apart from just being another animal running around, rutting on the earth. Is what makes men different, what makes man different, is the connection to the eternal realm. Otherwise, the argument could be made that you're nothing more than an animal. You're just another form of mammal walking around, just another breed of mammal walking the face of the earth. But we know that's not true by observation. So, well, you know, we have consciousness. We have the ability to reason, think things through, you know, understanding sentience. But that sentience is directly related to the spiritual realm. Do you understand what I'm saying? Otherwise, you're no different than a deer. You really are no different than a deer. If you don't have that connection to the spiritual, to God, which is available to you, through Christ. If you don't have that, then you really are no different than just a deer. You're just running around, you know, eating whatever, eating, crapping, you know, having sex. You're just an animal running about. No reasoning, no. Your sentience is a part of your spiritual nature, you see. Then you abandon the spiritual nature, you become like unreasoning beasts. You just run about, just acting on instinct. With nothing more. Your sentience is directly related to the spiritual nature. Thus, the further they drive you away from the spiritual, the further they drive you away from God, the further they drive you away from the eternal, you just become like an animal. Just livestock. When we talk about being in this world but not a part of this world, coming out from among them. We've covered that in multiple shows. Means you're not a part of the livestock mentality, huh? You're moving, ever striving to be as close as you can in this life. And you know, there's limits while we're in this realm. But we strive to be as close as we can to God, to the eternal, to the spiritual. And the more we manage to do that, the less we're going to be like the mass of unreasoning beasts out there that are running around, nothing, acting nothing different than animals, probably worse than animals. And of course, this alienates you. This sets you apart. You're not being a part of the herd, you see. You're not going to be popular because you stand there. You're setting yourself apart. But this is the path you're given. Otherwise, you get to be one of the unreasoning beasts who run around and drive themselves to their own destruction. So, as you seek God, as you seek to understand His will and to understand Him and understand how to figure out, you know, to know Him better by what He is doing, as you try to draw closer and closer to the spiritual, then by essence, you're going to move further and further away from the mass of livestock. Again, I mean, there's limits to how close you can get while you're stuck in this realm. You still have to struggle with your own failings and with the weaknesses of your own flesh. I mean, that is the normal thing. But as you continue, this is the whole point. As you struggle to move closer to the spiritual, you'll move less and less away from having a livestock mentality. And that is ultimately your goal as a Christian believer, to be as close as you can to the spiritual. So when you look at the masses of people who are running around, and it's easy, I suppose, to get like almost a sense of disdain toward them, the way they act like livestock. But remember, they've been led away. It means that spiritually they are far away from the spiritual. I guess so you could say it's a symptom of a sickness. I mean, if you saw someone who was sick, you would look down on them because they're sick. I mean, you just say, oh, well, that person's sick. They need some medical attention. And as people are running around acting, when you see these, so many of the people running about acting like unreasonable beasts, understand they're spiritually sick. They're spiritually alive. Now, obviously, you're going to have children of the devil. We have seed of the devil here in this world that are just going about doing the work of their father. You can't confuse the two. But when you're just talking about the people who've just been so separated from the spiritual, from the term, from the sense of a connection to their creator, to God, through Christ, they're so separated that then they're just down to the point of being unreasonable animals. Understand that they're sick. I mean, they're sick. They've been led astray. There's been nobody to guide them closer away from the livestock mentality and being what God wants them to be. There's no reason to look at them with disgust and animosity. Instead, I mean, really, in a lot of ways, they're to be pitied. They have strayed farther away. And, you know, if you can in any way, get them a little closer. But you have to be real careful, because the tendency is they're going to try to drag you down. They're going to try to drag you back into where they're at. They're going to try to drag you away from the spiritual. This takes vigilance on your part. We're social creatures, we're social beings, and when you're standing apart trying to draw people to the right, to the righteous, you know, they have a bigger mass. There's more people running around acting like animals, and they're going to have a tendency, it's going to be real easy for you to get sucked in to going their direction, you know, to being pulled towards them. But you have to stand fast. You have to be an anchor. You have to be that light. You have to be that solid rock, that tree firmly planted, that they don't pull you towards them, but that you are able, just a few, just to pull. I always go with this, with the attitude of, if one person goes away, you know, I do these shows and they're mentally, they're spiritually exhausted. I love doing the show, but I couldn't do the show at the level that we do it week in and week out. I couldn't do it if the show was a daily show. I couldn't do it if it was a twice a week show, to be honest, because it's spiritually and mentally draining to do these shows. But I always have the attitude that when I finish soap, if one person comes away blessed with, you know, a closer understanding of God, everybody else listens. If the entire congregation walks away and goes, he wasn't on his ball. Grandpa wasn't on his ball. I wasn't on the ball this week. Wasn't on his A game. But one person says, wow, I got something out of that. I feel like I understand a little more about the world around me, about God, about Christ, after hearing that. Then it's worth it. You know, we had a listener letter earlier in the show, you know, I come away now understanding this is a spiritual battle. I come away understanding more about God, more about my relationship in this role, in this spiritual struggle that is being played out on the stage of this world. If one person does that, then it's worthwhile. And that should be your attitude as well. You're not going to pull the whole mass of livestock closer to the spiritual realm. You're not going to be able to do that. You might start with a group. You might start with some and you know, and then you'll see them start going back. They'll just go back. But at the end, if you get one closer, you successfully get one drawn closer. That's why you've got to be anchored. You got to be true. You got to be real careful. Because at the end of the day, if you get one drawn in closer, then it's success. You're going to save the world. That's not realistic. But if you get one or two, this is a great thing and is celebrated in the kingdom of God. It's something to be proud of. It's something to be joyous over. So ground yourself, you know, and when given the opportunity, you know, draw a few closer. You can do this. You can do this even passively, just by the way you live your life, by the way you conduct yourself. If you conduct yourself with dignity, you're not running around chasing after materialism like the rest of the world. You say things that are truthful when everybody else is going along with the lie. You see, you ground yourself and people will be drawn to that to a certain extent. Yes, you stand off and the mass of people won't. But you can draw people closer to the spiritual just by the way you live your day-to-day life, just as an example. More people are watching you than you realize. People in your life, people around you, people in your sphere. And sometimes those people come back around and say, you know, just like what you said, you know, or just like I saw you and I thought about that. You don't even realize it. But there are people watching you. There are people seeing the example that you're setting. And in so doing, you can bring those people closer to the spiritual and less like being unreasonable animals. We got to wrap up on that note, folks. Remember, next week you're going to be looking for Grandpa Dan's Parish of the Patriots. It'll be the same show. Like I said, we're going to even continue the show count. We're not even changing. We're not starting at one. We're continuing on. So, yeah, look forward to that. I'm glad you stopped by. Again, thank you for those of you who pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. And, yeah, we appreciate you coming back here next week for what will be the Parish of the Patriots.